All right. You know, good morning. My name is Kurt. I'm the lead pastor here at Cross Point. Really excited to see you here this morning. We're in this series, as Eric said, called Accommodating Jesus. And, you know, these last two things we just experienced have a lot of really interesting imagery in them. You might be thinking, what does that have to do with Jesus? Well, you know, the words to this song right here, this whole idea of it's in the water. I mean, when people were living in Jesus' day, they would regularly see people healed. They would regularly see these miracles, almost to the point where people would say, man, was it in the water? I mean, what is it about this guy that wherever he is, he connects and takes care of the infirmities of people? You know, for many of us, as Eric said, we don't really understand the whole idea of a mob of people. We don't understand people gathering around, being drawn in magnetically. I mean, it's fascinating to me to watch flash mobs and how it starts with a very organized, orchestrated group. But before long, you find all kinds of people on the fringes being drawn into the party. And this is what we see with the person of Jesus. We see that Jesus met people where they were, and he had this catalytic nature of drawing them in to whatever he was doing. And so today we're going to continue this look at how God accommodates us, and specifically I really want us to zero in today at how God accommodates us through these healing moments, how Jesus meets people's needs, and how we still see that evidence today. And so that's the topic today, the healing power of Jesus. And before we do anything else, I want to just pause and pray. Let's do that. God, I'm thankful that we can gather in this dark room. We can have some fun. We can watch some things that make us laugh. I'm thankful we can come into a place and we can explore you. And we don't begin to believe that we all come from the same spiritual background or spiritual orientation. I know we come from all different directions and probably are at different places in our faith journey. And yet, God, the one thing I know is that you meet us wherever we're at. And so, God, I would ask that you would help that to happen today. As we take a look at some of your teachings, God, some of these things, if we're really honest, man, they seem ridiculous. They seem just outlandish, crazy things that you do that to any educated person would probably think, man, I just discount that. And so I would ask today, God, that you help us to see you for who you really are. Help us to see Jesus for who he really is. Help us to get a glimpse into these stories and not only what they had to do with people back then, but how you meet us and meet our needs today. Pray that you help us to experience you in some unique way. May every word that comes out of my mouth, everything that happens in this room, be directed in that way today, I pray. We know when Cross Point first began, we established this place, really for people who had given up on church, hadn't given up. People who, we were increasingly seeing that we're just finding that, the whole church community, man, I've done. We're very spiritually oriented, but weren't finding pathways to connect with God and the Holy Community Church. And so, we're very passionate about when we began, and really, are today is this whole idea of community, this whole idea of connecting with people in life, doing life, where our Christian journey, our faith, our experience with Christ is way more than what happens here on a Sunday morning, 65, 70 minutes in an auditorium. And so, one of the things we realized real early on, we were practicing in deep, deep community, was that, if I can be really honest, community can be very, very messy at times. In fact, in one of the early kind of impromptu communities that formed through Crosspoint. It was a development that happened, at least I think it's unique, in the sense that this small group of women who were accompanied by their spouses, their significant others, that began to form a community was the kind of community that I don't think any single one of us would ever want to be a part of. In fact, as they formed this community, as they connected, as they engaged, it was around this central thread, this central theme called cancer. And there's a depth that comes with people who are walking the journey of cancer together. And these were young girls and young women, 22, 23, 24 years old, all dealing with different forms of cancer. They'd gotten connected actually because of their cancer treatments. And so I don't know if you've ever walked along the side of someone who's dealing with cancer. I don't know if you've been close to someone. Maybe you've dealt with cancer yourself. It's a rough road. It's a rough road. You need community, but community can get messy as well. I mean, I think sometimes community is hard because it isn't just, the idea of dealing with this illness that's taken control of my life that I'm completely powerless to, though I think that's part of it. It's not fully this idea of the treatments and the chemotherapy and the radiation, the residual effects of all of those things and the toll it takes on the physical body, though I think that's a part of it as well. I think it's not just found in the sense of watching, if you're the one that has this disease and is walking this journey, watching your loved ones struggle as they watch you deteriorate, though I think that's part of it. But I think one of the most difficult parts, along with these things, is knowing that when you begin to form community, when you begin to get connected with other individuals who are walking the cancer journey, if you're by chance the one who's fortunate enough to get on a healing path, on a path where your margins are clear, it's hard to even come to a place of celebrating because you know the friend right next to you may never experience that. I mean, that's rough stuff. In fact, these three young ladies, Sarah, Meredith in the middle, and Maggie on the right, they were walking this journey together here, and two of them are one Meredith in the middle, at the age of 425, colon cancer overtook her. And this is hard stuff. I mean, a person of faith, a person who has strong beliefs, who lived her life as an advertisement of what God was doing in her and this bigger healing that God was doing, and yet we didn't see the physical healing take place here on this earth. And so, you know, it's hard to make sense of stuff like that. And so I promise you, that's a heavy thing, but later on this morning, I promise you you're going to hear from one of the other stories, one of the stories of one of the other two young ladies that are still with us this morning. Because it's important for us to hear these stories. It's important for us to understand this. It's important for us to see the healing powers of Jesus. And it's important for us to understand and see both sides. But before we do that, this morning, I first want to look at some of the miracle stories of Jesus. You know, last week we looked at how Jesus is very personal, how Jesus meets us exactly where we are. Jesus hung with normal people. Jesus, you know, this is what upset all the religious leaders. He just connected with people and he met the everyday needs. He got involved in the mundane. And today what I really want to dive into are these healing examples, these healing stories where we see Jesus get involved and heal people literally, physically, emotionally, in every aspect of who they are. And these are in all of the accounts. This is in Matthew, these are in Mark, these are in Luke, these are in the stories from John. And these are four men, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, are four different accounts of Jesus' life. These are the authorized biographies of Jesus' life. These are men watching Jesus interact and work and heal and them just writing down what they're literally seeing. And I can remember these stories as kids. I mean, these are like my favorite stories. Hearing the story of Jesus, you know, touching the leper who had his skin covered in flaky white stuff, and immediately it was all gone, and the man would walk away well. Seeing Jesus touch people who were blind, and immediately they could see. People who were lame, and they could walk. And it was kind of like, I remember this idea that, man, when Jesus shows up, I mean, he's like Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, and the Easter Bunny in one. Good things just happen whenever Jesus is around. And that was kind of the picture I thought of when I thought of Jesus. In fact, I remember thinking even, you know, I'm good because if ever something bad happens to me or my friends, Jesus will just show up and fix it. Well, you know, as I began to get older, as I matured, which, you know, the verdict about how much that's happened since those days. But, you know, as I matured, I began to realize that, man, some of these things I thought were so cool, I began to realize I don't know that I believe them. Some of these stories. Some of my friends began to walk the journey of terminal illness, and I watched people not experience the same things I saw in the scriptures. I began to say, you know, and I didn't like check this out with anybody, but I'm like, man, any intellectual, reasonably intellectual, somewhat educated, reasonably logical person would just naturally discount some of these crazy radical things that you read throughout the story of Jesus' life. Because I just couldn't make it fit any longer. I mean, I watched one of the students in our student ministry, you know, at the age of 14, be overcome and eventually die to leukemia. A child of faith, a student of faith. I watched one of our team members in our student ministry who had served alongside in prison ministry for a number of years, going in and out of the Pendleton Reformatory every Friday night. A gentleman who probably led dozens, if not hundreds of men inside those prison walls into a relationship with Jesus Christ, eventually succumbed to this rare blood disorder. A person of faith, you know, if there's anybody that captured faith, it was Bill. And yet his physical body was never healed. And so I'm trying to wrestle and make sense of this stuff, and I'd read these crazy stories and see ridiculous things happen, and I just thought, man, I need to sift through this, and I need to begin to work through, you know, and sift out the crazy things and figure out what I really believe about this. So that's what I did, and if you ever have those questions, doubts, I would encourage you to do the same thing. Wrestle through and begin to go through the scriptures and just see what happens as you do that. And the word of encouragement I'd have is start with the book of Mark because it's the shortest. It's the easiest to get through, and so here's kind of what that looked like. I began in Mark chapter 1, and in Mark chapter 1, you see Jesus immediately driving out evil spirits in a man. And then the next, he goes and he brings Peter's mother-in-law back to life. We talked about that last week, and Peter's like, dude, what are you doing? Couldn't you pick somebody else other than my mother-in-law to reinstate into this world? But that's what he did. And because of this, all of a sudden, there's this crowd that's gathered around Peter's house. And Jesus walks out, and he begins to accommodate the needs of every single person, this mob of people that have gathered around this healing that took place with Peter's mother-in-law. He began to heal one after the other. And then Jesus heals this man with leprosy. I mean, this is like the disease of disease. This was the cancer of that day. And Jesus just heals the man. This is big. And that's just in Mark chapter 1. We go to Mark chapter 2, and we see that Jesus, this is the story of Jesus and the paralytic. We looked at this last week and how these four men brought this guy on a mat who I think is named Matt. I always thought that the guy on the mat was named Matt because I like the name Matt. It's my son's name. And so Matt is brought by his friends to Jesus, and there's a mob of people again where Jesus is reclining. They can't get in the house, so they dig through the thatch roof and lower their friend Matt in front of Jesus while he's eating a taco or something. And Jesus immediately, he heals the man. And he heals him. Get this, he heals him not because of Matt's faith, but because of the faith of his friends. That's chapter 2. We get to chapter 3, and it says, by now, Mark says, man, Jesus, the crowds are just swarming around Jesus. I mean, it's like a glob of people wherever Jesus goes. In fact, he can't even, do his teaching. People are constantly pressing up against him, thinking, if I could just touch the edge of his garment, then I could be well. And Jesus is getting a bit claustrophobic, and people are just closing in on every side of him. And so he begins to develop an exit strategy. He sees Peter, Simon's boat, kind of back in the distance. He says, hey, Peter, let's go out in your boat and push off from shore for a moment. So that's what they do. He says, let's go back to like 6 feet or so. And why 6 feet? Because, if somebody was like still wanting to press against Jesus, they'd be drowning by this point, right? He created a barrier for himself so he could continue teaching. You see, this was the catalytic magnetic nature of what Jesus experienced every day. And then we go to chapter 4, and if you look at chapter 4 of Mark, there's no healing stories there. You can go read it. You can go, when you go home today, take a look. Chapter 4, no healing stories. Jesus just calms a storm. That's it. No big deal. Hey, stop, wind, stop, storm, stop. And everything just stopped. That was chapter 4. Chapter 5, he's back at it again. He drives out another demon and a demon-possessed man. He heals a sick woman, and then he goes and he brings a dead girl back to life. And as you can see, in my exploration, all of a sudden, it's difficult. How do you separate the crazy, ridiculous things out from the logical, conventional, Jesus is safe, Jesus is always predictable, that I was looking for as I was trying to make sense of what I was experiencing today? And before long, you begin to realize, this is all tangled together. The Jesus of that day, it was all tangled together. He's regularly encountering and accommodating and meeting the needs of everyday people. And if you go on a journey like this, before long, you begin to see, you begin to experience the Bible in a whole new way. All of a sudden you begin to dive in, you see that Jesus was very, very unique. If you could just get to the side of Jesus, things would be different. Everything would change. Now, there's something that it kind of made me curious. When you look at Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all refer to these episodes or these experiences as healing miracles. But John, the fourth guy on the other hand, he does not. He actually calls them signs. He says, these are signs. In fact, here's where we see him mention it in John chapter 6. He says, a great crowd of people followed him because they saw signs he had performed by healing the sick. And so why did John use the word signs? What is he saying right here? Think about a sign. What does a sign tell you? When you drive out of here, what are the signs you're going to see? You're going to see a construction sign that says construction ahead. You're going to see a curvy road ahead sign. You're going to see an enter the interstate here sign. You're going to see 465 signs. You're going to see I-69 signs. Signs are what? They're not an end in of themselves. A sign is there simply to point you to something else. And so what is John wanting us to see right here? If you think about this, the obvious thing probably would be to like our childhood days, right? We see Jesus, we see him performing all these cool miracles. And we're like, he's just telling us that he's God. This is Jesus saying, hey, I'm really who I say I am. I'm divine, I'm God, even though I'm human. Maybe this is just about Jesus putting on a show because he wanted to entertain all the crowds. Maybe this is about Jesus just wanting to meet the needs of people, accommodating people. But then maybe what John is suggesting by calling these signs is that Jesus, he's just giving us a real picture of what God's heart is like. Maybe he's just saying, hey, I'm a person of compassion. Every time I see a need, I want to intervene and step in and meet it right here and right now. I want to heal it. I want to meet it. I want to accommodate it. So there's something that John is saying right here
about signs. Now, the one thing I think we can know for sure is that whenever Jesus did these miracles, I think that these stories were about Jesus saying, I'm not ignoring illness. I think first and foremost, we see very quickly that Jesus does not ignore illness. In fact, if you're here today, if you're sitting in this room and you're suffering, you're struggling, there's some illness in your body, then I want you to know that Jesus is not ignoring you. In fact, in the scriptures, it even talks about how God is closer to those that are suffering than anybody else. In fact, this was the whole point of what Jesus came down into this earth to do. The reason he lowered himself down in the form of flesh and love. In fact, his mission statement, which we find in Luke chapter 4, says these very things. Jesus said, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim the good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom to the prisoners, recovery of sight to the blind, and to set the oppressed free. Jesus says, this is why I'm here. I'm to proclaim these things. This is if you're struggling and you're hurting, let me just let you know, I'm very close to you right now. This is why people always wanted to touch him. The second thing we know, is that Jesus identified the source of illness, disease, and death. In fact, he even talks about it here in Luke chapter 13. Take a look at what he says here. It says, on the Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, and a woman who was there had been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. So get this, there had been something inside of her, a spirit that was crippling her, that was decapacitating her for 18 years. It says she was bent over and she could not straighten up at all. It's like she needed a good chiropractor. What she really needed was a savior, a rescuer. When Jesus saw her, he called her forward and said to her, woman, you are set free from your infirmity. Then he put his hands on her, and immediately she straightened up and praised God. Indignant because of this, because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, the synagogue leader said to the people, there are 6 days for work, so come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath. I mean, this is like typical for the synagogue leaders. I mean, like, whoa, we're not about healing on these days. This is a day where you just come and you do religious things. This isn't where your needs get met on a very practical level. And Jesus is saying, whoa, that's why I came. To proclaim freedom, to give sight to the blind, to set those who are oppressed free. Jesus answered, you hypocrites, doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie your donkey or your ox from the stall and lead it out to give it water? Then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, who Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, that phrase right there, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what is bound her? So Jesus immediately identifies the source right here. He's very quick in saying, hey, the source of illness, the source of disease, the source of death in our world, it's not me. It's the presence of the kingdom of darkness in our midst. He says, this is what it is. It's not me, like laughing at you behind the scenes, saying, hey, look what I'm going to throw their way. He says very clearly, this is Satan, the source of all darkness, evidencing itself in the world. You know, ran across a really cool book a couple weeks ago by Dr. Greg Boyd. It's called, Is God to Blame? And if you're somebody who struggles with, you know, why am I dealing with suffering? This would be a great book to write down right here, a great book to get off, you can get off Amazon. Here's what he says. He comments actually on that story right there. Dr. Boyd says, Jesus didn't offer the counsel that many believers today offer. He didn't suggest that this woman's afflictions were somehow a part of his father's secret plan. He didn't encourage her to accept her affliction as coming from a father's hand. Neither did he encourage her to believe that her father was hiding a smile behind the frowning providence of her deformity. It's on the contrary, actually. What's going on is Jesus taught his audience, hey, if you're suffering right now, if you're dealing with illness, if you're dealing with disease, if you're struggling with death, then this is the presence of Satan resisting my will in the world. That's what it is. And here's the deal. When Jesus healed her, it was literally him displaying his will, overriding the will of Satan in the presence of ordinary people. And so he says, hey, if you're suffering, I'm close. He says, hey, if you're wondering where these things come from, if you're wondering why there's illness and disease, remember, these things are not from me. These are from the presence of darkness. It's all a part of the broken side of the world. The world is not the way I intended it to be. And the third thing he says is, I'll set you free. He says, I'm the one who has the ability to set you free. This is my message. This is why I came. I came to accommodate you and to take you to a new place. He says, you got to trust me on this. It's about trust. It's about believing that, that regardless of what my circumstances are, that you actually are close, God, that you actually do care, that you actually are not the source of this illness, and that you are the one who can take me to a new place. He says, I'll restore, I will heal with my power. I will begin a pathway that will take you to an entirely different place. And he says, when you experience these things, this is how you respond. You connect with the one who will take you to a new place. Now, as I promised earlier, I want you to hear one of the stories today of one of the three cancer patients, one of the three cancer individuals that I spoke of earlier. And so I want to invite Maggie to join me this morning. Let's welcome her as she comes. Now, Maggie and I go way back. See, I was Maggie's youth pastor when she was like a junior higher, and then we uniquely got connected, ran across her when we were launching CrossPoint. So you've been here since we began. And so tell us a little bit about your cancer story, because I know for me, I mean, that was a huge shock. I know it probably was for you.
It was definitely a shock. I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer the summer between my sophomore and junior year of college. So I was 19 years old. And when the doctor said that I had ovarian cancer, I first thought, well, I'm not my grandmother, because I assumed that ovarian cancer always affected older women. And then I was just in denial. I went through the shock, and then I went through denial. And it was an interesting way how I was diagnosed, and that's a pretty long story. But it was several different false diagnoses before they found what was actually truly the problem. And so I was getting discouraged because I knew something was wrong with my body, but I was not told a truthful answer. And because I was 19 and in college, not that I had lost track of my faith, but it just wasn't central in my life at that point. Like Kurt said, I grew up in a very strong Christian home and have known Kurt since I was a very little girl. And so it's not that I ever lost God in my life. I just kind of did not make that a priority. And so as time went on, this was the summer, and I was still getting treatments when I went back to Purdue in the start of my junior year. There were a lot of things that happened that summer that really awakened me that God still was in my life. I'm the youngest of three girls, and my middle sister was working on her master's in accounting at University of Illinois. And my oldest sister was married and living in Chicago. And throughout that summer, there was something that brought both of my sisters home to Indianapolis again. My oldest sister's husband got a job, and so they moved, and their family came back to Indianapolis. And my middle sister decided to do her coursework through an Indiana location instead. And none of that had been decided prior, but something and God brought my family back home to me when I needed them, probably more than anything.
Yeah, and so, you know, as you went through that, I mean, you obviously, you were cleared. I mean, you were cleared from ovarian cancer, and margins are clear. And yet, you know, I know healing goes a lot deeper than that. Oftentimes, we just look for the physical. Mm-hmm. How did you experience a healing that went beyond just the physical?
Beyond just the physical healing, I mean, I felt the light of realizing that God was still a part of my life and seeing him heal me physically, but also heal my heart and heal my family. I mean, we are a Christian family, but it hadn't been as important and as deep of a root in our lives as we had gotten older. And I've seen that healing through my sister's family and her children, through my middle sister. And I mean, she married a Christian man, and they have raised their family in a Christian home, and just things that I wasn't sure were going to go that way for my family at one point. And I have seen that weight and that light through them, as well as just bringing people into my life that I can help and that I can see. I mean, with Sarah and Meredith, I mean, like Kurt said, one of them is not here anymore, but I was able to see the healing of her heart before she passed away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times God is, you know, working in way deeper ways than we ever imagine. You know, as you went through this, I mean, ovarian cancer, you got a great gift out of that. Tell us a little bit about Wyatt and what he means to you.
I had been told through my treatment that I would never be able to have a child. And then I met Chris through CrossPoint, and we got married. And
Chris, whose birthday is today?
Chris, whose birthday is today. Happy birthday. And we met through CrossPoint and just kind of pursued different avenues of what our family would be like. And along the way, we did have a miscarriage. And Chris is diabetic, and so I see pain and illness in his life every day. And so throughout this, we were blessed with a 13-month-old little boy named Wyatt, who is the apple of our eye and pretty adorable if you ask us. And just something that I never thought would be a part of my life and that I never thought would be a realistic hope for us. And the day that we found out that I was pregnant again was just a pretty extremely wonderful day. And I can't believe that he's ours.
You know, one of the things, I've known Maggie a long time. In fact, our third daughter is named after Maggie. Our Maggie is named after her. Because, you know, Maggie would always brighten the room. Her and her sisters both. I knew her and her next oldest sister. There was always a joy about them. And it would be easy for that to be taken when you go through something like this. Would you say you're freer today than you were pre-cancer?
Absolutely. I mean, I realize what life can offer now more than I did before. I mean, I have always been the eternal optimist, and people that know me know that it takes a lot to get me down. And I do. I mean, I have my moments where I do, but there is so much joy and so much passion in the life around us that I definitely think that there is so much more freedom from the healing that has happened.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing your story today, Maggie.
You're welcome.
We're excited you're here. Thanks. You know, this is Maggie's job right here, to be an advertisement. I think this is what John's saying. He's saying, hey, whenever there's a healing, this is a sign. It's a sign that, hey, I'm still at work. I'm still restoring. I'm still renewing. I thought back to one of the real difficult times in my life. There was a book by a guy by the name of Max Lucado called Traveling Light. And went back to chapter 6 of that book, and he has a way with words, and he kind of talked about when we find ourselves in the jungle, whether it's through an illness, whether it's just struggling in a difficult situation. Here's what he said. You know, if you're there today, if you're struggling, if there's something going on, and you're just struggling to see, can God really meet me here? I want you to see if you connect with this. He says, imagine yourself in a jungle, a dense jungle, a dark jungle, and you're traveling alone, and you're lost. I don't know if you've ever been in a place where you've been lost and you don't even know where you're at. I remember as a child going into the woods late in the evening, right before dusk, and it's getting dark, and my friends had kind of run away, were playing hide and seek, and I had no clue how to get out. I mean, just that panic that comes when you feel like I'm stuck here, I can't even see the light of day, and I don't even know which direction to go. We've probably all been there at one point or another. And then he goes on, he says, think just as vividly, imagine getting rescued. He said, what would that be like? What would you want in a rescuer? I mean, obviously, you'd probably want a person, right? You want somebody in the flesh. You want somebody who wasn't equally lost and confused as you are. You'd want somebody who was going to be an encouragement, but probably more than just an encouragement. You want somebody who knew how to get you out, somebody who knew which direction to go. And Lucado goes on, he says, now, if you only had a person that was an encouragement, but they didn't have a vision or a renewed vision of where you should go, all you would have is company. And he says, if that person had a vision but no direction, you'd have a dreamer for company, and that wouldn't do you a lot of good. You just sit around talking about all the dreams, right? But he says, but if you have a person with direction that can take you from this place to the place you need to be, then you have somebody who could rescue you and give you a hope. He says, now, no, the jungle's still there. He said, you know, just because you're rescued, the jungle's still there. You know, you haven't left the jungle. The trees still eclipse the sky. The thorns still cut the skin. Animals lurk and rodents scurry. The jungle is still a jungle. It hasn't changed, but you have. He says, there's a guide that's come before you, and he has a machete, and he's clearing the brush in front of you. He's clearing the tall weeds, the underbrush, and you, the traveler, but now you're weary, you're tired. You're beginning to get a bit hot and frustrated, and you're thinking, where's the path? Are we on the path? Do you know where the path is? Where are we? Where are you taking me? And eventually, the seasoned, experienced guide stops, and he looks right at you in the eye, and he says, I am the path. I am the path. You know, when we're suffering, when we're in the midst of disease, when we're in the midst of illness, there's a healing that can come in a thousand different ways. Sometimes it's the way we need. Sometimes it's the way we want. But Jesus always goes deeper and further than we really think we need. And sometimes all we got to do is say, you know, God, I don't know what the solution is here, but all I need to do right now is I need to connect to the path. So we kind of close this morning. I want you to take out your connection cards that we referred to earlier this morning. We're going to do a number of things in these next moments. We're going to physically, in a few moments, experience some things that help us connect with this path. But before we do that, I want you to take the back of this card. There's some next steps there. And, you know, each week, we give the opportunity for you to just kind of process through and say, you know, what do I need this morning? What am I really looking for? What is it that I need God to meet me in right here, right now? Probably different for every single one of us. But I want to give you a moment to kind of just process and allow God to just kind of nudge you in a direction. Maybe there's something on the back of this card. Maybe you just need to say, you know, I need prayer. I need prayer for healing. I need a healing to come. Maybe you need to take a step toward God. Maybe you need to reconnect with the path. Maybe it's going to come along somebody else who needs to find the path. I don't know what it is, but I want to encourage you in these next moments, just take a moment as PJ plays here and just get quiet for a moment and see if God doesn't nudge you in a direction here and mark that on your card. The New Testament, your James, says, if is anyone among you in trouble, let them pray. Is anyone happy, let them sing songs of praise. Is anyone among you sick? It's interesting. He runs the full gamut of the human experience in one sentence, two sentences right there. Hey, is anybody in trouble? If you're in trouble, I've been there. James says, I've been there. Is anybody happy? Man, you need to sing. I mean, if you're happy today, you need to sing because the person next to you, man, they may not be there today and you may need to sing. Says, is anyone among you sick? And the word sick here is often used to refer to an infirmity, a disease, an illness, something physical, and yet it can also be translated into weary. It can be translated into tired. It can be translated into the sense of, man, I just don't feel like I can face another day. He says, this is where you are. He goes on. He says, let them call the elders of the church to pray over them and anoint them with the oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer offered in faith will make the sick person well. The Lord will raise them up. If they have sinned, they will be forgiven. He says, hey, are any of you just barely hanging on? Do you have a physical illness you just feel like is killing you physically or emotionally or spiritually? I mean, is there anything just saying, hey, I just can't go on? He says, if this is where you are, then he says, don't suffer in quiet. Go and let the elders, let the leaders of the church know. Let them pray for you. Let them anoint you with oil. In a few moments, we're going to provide the opportunity for this to take place. We have some oil. You know, we're going to provide the opportunity, if you're struggling today, to just have a cross of olive oil on your forehead as a symbol of the healing power of Jesus. And then we're going to pray as James has instructed us, as God invites us to pray in the power in the name of Jesus for there to be a healing, for there to be a meeting, for there to be a renewing. James is saying, let those who are a little stronger, at least for the moment, surround you so you don't have to suffer alone. We're also in the next few moments going to share in this meal that was celebrated a little over 2,000 years ago. And this is a meal where Jesus, on this Passover week, it wasn't called the Passover, it was called the Passover meal. They didn't really call it communion or the Holy Eucharist or the Mass. They just said this is Passover. But Jesus did something very unique in that experience. They'd always had the elements on the table, but he took them to a new place. For in this encounter, when he was sitting with his closest friends, he took the bread off the table and he said, from this day forward, after he gave thanks, he said, I want you to take this and eat it. This is my body. And they were like, what do you mean, Jesus? They didn't understand this. He said, hey, my body's going to be broken for you in ways that you can never imagine. And from this day forward, I want you to remember my body. Whenever you're struggling, whenever you're feeling like I just can't go on, I want you to remember that I broke my body for you, that I actually paid the price so you could be redeemed, you could be healed, I could take on your infirmities, and there could be a restoring. And then he took the common cup on the table and he gave thanks and he invited them to drink from it. And he said, this is the blood of the covenant which is poured out for many. He actually did it for everyone. He said, this is for everyone, but only many will experience it. He realized there are some who will never come to experience this because they have to be willing to receive it. They have to be willing to receive the grace. To say, God, I want your grace. I need your grace. I want to be in relationship with you. I want to receive your redemption based on the price you paid. And for some of us, we may just need to reconnect with the path this morning. Some of us may be joyful today. You may be happy. You may be like, man, people wish they had my problems. I couldn't be better. If I'd be any better, I'd be you. And you just need to sing, man. You need to celebrate as you share in this today, because probably the person next to you is maybe struggling a little bit. And if you're struggling, I'm going to invite you to come and remember there's a God who redeemed. And so we practice open communion here at Cross Point, which means that if anyone who calls on Jesus as their Savior, as their Redeemer, as their friend, anyone who has a relationship with Christ, God says, come and share and celebrate in this redemption. And if you're here today and you've never taken this step and you say, you know, I need a God like that. I need a God who meets me where I am and begins to restore and renew. It happens right away. Jesus calls it new life and it begins right away. And maybe today is your first communion. Maybe today is the first time you come and you dip the bread in the cup and you remember his body who was broken. You say, God, I want to receive your grace. And you eat as a symbol of the redemption. So we're going to do this. I'm going to invite you to stand, and we're going to sing in just a moment. But first, let's pray. Stand with me. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your great redemption. We thank you for the great provision that you made, that you even said, while we were still out sinning, you paid the price for us. And God, I know there's some of us in this room who are suffering this morning. There's some of us who feel like we're on the last thread, that we're at that place where we just don't know if I have it in me to go on. You say, come to me. If you're weary, if you're burdened, come. Let those gather around you who may be a little stronger, at least at the moment, let us pray for you. God, there's probably some of us who need to connect with you as the path. Maybe we're in the jungle, and the jungle may not go away, but there can be a healing and a restoring in the jungle. Maybe we need something physically from you today. Maybe we need something spiritually or emotionally or relationally. God, sometimes we think we know what we want, but God, you know exactly what we need. And as we seek that, you immediately begin to restore and renew. So I pray that you would help us to connect with you in these next moments. Amen. As we sing, I invite you to come if you would like to participate in taking the bread, dipping it in the juice, and share in the bread and the cup. If you would like to be prayed for today, if you're just struggling and you would like for us to pray for you, to anoint you with oil, there's going to be two prayer stations by the blue banners next to the screens. You can make your way over there after communion. You can come straight to the stations. We'll be there through the next few songs. If you would like someone to pray for you and pray for healing, we would love to do that for you today. So as we sing, we invite you to come.